One of the classic and truly important books of the 20th century was written by Walter Youngquist in 1997, titled Geodestinies: The Inevitable Control of Earth Resources Over Nations and Individuals. Dr. Walter Youngquist is a professor emeritus of geology at the University of Oregon and an eminent authority on energy issues. Dr. Youngquist has worked as a researcher, advisor, and consultant in more than 70 countries, including work for Exxon Corporation, Sun Oil, Shell Oil, and Amoco. Dr. Youngquist is an emeritus member of the American Association of Petroleum Geologists, the AAPG, and a fellow of the Geological Society of America and the American Association for the Advancement of Science. He has received his PhD in geology from the University of Iowa. What follows is an introductory summary of this book written by Walter Youngquist in April of 2012. The book has been edited and has not been yet published in an updated version, but with Dr. Youngquist's gracious permission and also the permission of Social Contract Press, I'm recording the unofficial audiobook of this. I may eventually record the official audio in a professional studio, but this is just an unofficial audio recorded here at home, so I will occasionally stumble on some words or mispronounce something. But frankly, this book is way, way too important to not be available in audio form. And so that's why I sought permission to record it, and I'm doing so. So here is the introductory overview written by Dr. Walter Youngquist in 2012. The destinies of all nations and all people are in many ways bound up with the mineral and energy mineral resources of the earth. Events in the geologic past have richly endowed some nations with valuable resources, whereas others have very few. The result is markedly different destinies for different nations. How these resources have affected the peoples of the past, how they influence our lives now, and how they will determine our futures is the study of geodestinies. Humans are relative latecomers on the Earth. It existed well, very well, for several billion years without us. Since our arrival and development of cultures into the present technological age, we have, in a very brief time, had an impact on the Earth far greater than any other organism. This has been largely due to the discovery, exploitation, and greatly expanded use of energy from fossil fuels. M. King Hubbert, in 1971, made this cautionary observation, quote, "It is difficult for people living now who have become accustomed to steady exponential growth in consumption of energy from fossil fuels to realize how transitory the fossil fuel epoch will eventually prove to be when it is viewed over a longer span of human history." Unquote. Some of us have been very fortunate to live in these times of major technological and medical advances, and with relatively inexpensive and abundant fossil fuels, especially oil, providing us with a lifestyle totally unimaginable 200 years ago. But we are now living at a great turning point in Earth and human history, which, if not clear now, will be clear when viewed in retrospect. It is apparent that current political, economic, and social efforts are to keep things as they are, to resist change. People generally do not like to change in their lifestyles and their economic situations if they believe they are presently good. But changes come and are unavoidable. Climate is nearly always in a state of flux. Sea level and its related shorelines change. Lifestyles change largely due to changes in the environment, which includes climate, and the availability and costs of resources to support them. Advances in technology and the way energy is used determines lifestyle and culture. When I was born, cars were a rarity, and paved roads outside cities were hardly known. Lindbergh had not yet flown across the Atlantic, and I never heard the words jet airplane or television. The United States had only about 100 million people. It's now 320 million and growing. World population was about 2 billion. Electric refrigerators were unknown. In the Minnesota winters, ice blocks were cut from local lakes and stored in big bins and sawdust to be delivered to ice boxes at each house. Milk and bread were delivered to individual homes by horse and wagon, and coal and wood used as the main home heating sources. Going to the moon, quote-unquote, was a description for something impossible. The matter of population growth was never considered. The world had then had less than one-third the people it now has. I visualized the future as more of the same. Obviously, it turned out much differently just within my lifetime. Men have walked on the moon. We have paved highways across much of the world, some spanning continents. Bread and milk are now only delivered to supermarkets and neighborhood grocery stores. Just as the world changed remarkably within my lifetime, the world of most of those reading this book will surely also change. Successfully adjusting to a future different in terms of basic resources and lifestyle is the immediate challenge for all of us, especially the young. As future generations look back upon us, will we be remembered as those who intelligently made necessary adjustments to assure a successful future? Will we be known as conscientious caretakers of the renewable resources needed for the future, particularly soil and fresh water? From the past several billion years of Earth's history and myriad geological processes, humans inherited a great storehouse of mineral and energy resources. We have also benefited from a wealth of diverse biological resources. In earlier centuries, with many fewer people, these Earth resources were exploited slowly and in minor amounts. But within the past few hundred years, the industrial age and advancing technologies greatly increased the rate and volume of resource exploitation, while we learned how to utilize these resources in myriad ways. It has been the use of these Earth resources during about 300 years that is the base of our present civilization. President John F. Kennedy, in February 1961, said, quote, "Our entire society rests upon, is dependent upon, our water, our land, our forests, and our minerals," unquote. Oil use and depletion. The change in world lifestyles and economies brought about by the use of oil cannot be overstated. Oil permeates human existence as no other substance ever has, or probably will, creating a truly unique time in human history. Oil powers world economies. Almost everything produced or consumed in industrial economies has an input of oil somewhere in its production cycle. The range of products made from oil or that contain oil include tires, golf balls, ice cream, vanilla flavoring, hair dye, toothpaste, and many medicines. What other material can pave our roads or be part of our cosmetics, an engine coolant, propylene glycol, a pain reliever, or the polyester clothing we wear? Oil is a non-renewable resource, and its world production may have already peaked. Production decline and ultimate depletion will cause many changes in economies and lifestyles, just as it has since early discovery and development. A number of studies of the amount of oil and timeframes for extraction have calculated ultimate decline. Exact dates for depletion are slightly variable, but there is general agreement that this century will see it arrive. All oil-derived products, especially gasoline and diesel, will eventually increase in price. The easy oil has been found, and future oil will be much more expensive and scarce. Industrialized societies, and those striving to become more so, tend to lose sight of this basic fact. Earth resources underlie and support our existence. They always have and always will. Shuffling papers and printing quote-unquote money in the world's financial centers are secondary activities to the discovery and use of non-renewable and renewable resources. Sometimes the paper shuffling and printing of money greatly affects economies, but every economic system is based upon earth resources, the ultimate source of wealth. I'm going to read that paragraph again. Industrialized societies and those striving to become more so tend to lose sight of this basic fact. Earth resources underlie and support our existence. They always have and always will. Shuffling papers and printing money in the world's financial centers are secondary activities to the discovery and use of non-renewable and renewable resources. Sometimes the paper shuffling and printing of money greatly affects economies, but every economic system is based upon earth resources, the ultimate source of wealth. An exponential century that cannot be repeated. The exponential increase in use of earth resources has led to a huge rise in the standard of living for some segments of the population, chiefly in the industrial world, and the hope for a better standard of living by many others. But the rapid exploitation of resources since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, coupled with continued population increase, cannot continue. The globalization of commerce and trade by use of oil has led to the worldwide exploitation of mineral and energy resources by the industrialized and industrializing countries. In effect, the tragedy of the commons, Hardin 1969, in its ultimate final form. The decline of oil production will in turn result in the return of local economies forced to exist on more locally available resources, as has been the circumstance during much of human history. This will greatly remake our economies and lifestyles from what we know today. This profoundly important fact is discussed again in its various aspects in subsequent chapters. With the huge population growth made possible by advances in medicine and sanitation, and greatly increased food production, largely a benefit of fossil fuels, the finite earth resources are under unprecedented stress. In 1700, world population is estimated to have been about 610 million. It is now 7 billion and increasing every day. This huge increase in population and the related increase in resource consumption are the salient facts of the past three centuries. Population growth is the force that drives resource consumption. As we view at the present and look toward the future, this is the overriding challenge to a sustainable and acceptable future. Due to differences in living standards, some populations in industrialized countries use more resources per capita than other populations. In some places, local populations are so desperate to survive, they destroy the environment with present use and cannot preserve it to sustain future population. In general, population growth and the environment are in direct conflict. In terms of resource per capita, whether it is large or small, more people use more resources, renewable and non-renewable. The 21st century will probably see as many changes, but some of them may be in reverse. One inevitable change will be a decline in the amount of oil and gas used. The quadrupling of population since 1900 cannot be repeated, and a reduction in population is far more likely. The 20th century was an accelerating century of population growth and resource use. The Earth cannot support two such centuries back to back. Yet we are trying to do just that. It won't work. Much more to learn in a short time. The world has become vastly more complex the last 100 years. There is so much more to learn now than a century ago. A basic problem is that a child born today knows no more on the first day of life than a child born 1,000 years ago. But now, in just a few decades, a child must learn a tremendous amount to take its place as a productive, knowledgeable part of society and vote intelligently in a democracy. The hallmark of civilization and what is vital to assuring its future is education. For people worldwide, it is vital that education be of the highest priority. Much of the discussion in the following chapters deals with the effects of the huge, still growing world population and the great rise in the living standards of many people. Fossil fuels, mined phosphate and potassium mineral fertilizers, ammonia produced from natural gas, and pesticides made from oil have combined to enable us to harvest more from the land than nature would produce. We have, in effect, harvested from ghost acres of land that do not really exist, but are provided for us by these resources. As long as the earth is viewed as the property of humans to be exploited for their benefit and not shared with all other organisms in the environment, quote, then we are destined to soon inhabit a biological wasteland, unquote, in which humans can no longer be supported. Hedges, 2009. Quote, thus, there is the general moral problem of bequeathing to future generations a negative legacy, an ecologically damaged world, unquote. McMichael, 1993. Greatly enhanced oil-fueled agricultural production lifted the dawn-to-dusk, life-shortening, back-breaking task of tilling the soil from many people, allowing them to go to population centers and work at manufacturing and related commerce, which further improved standards of living. Research centers and universities were established and expanded, making advanced education widely available. For the most part, these advantages have been the result of civilization living on a great natural legacy, an inheritance, from ancient sunlight or distant geological ages. The oil, coal, and natural gas we consume are derived from organisms that absorbed that sunlight. In a sense, these fuels are fossil sunlight. Using these energy resources, we have been able to extract and process mineral resources from the earth. We have mined metals and nonmetal resources and smelted, fabricated, processed, and fashioned them into machines and applications of all kinds and many uses. But most of these materials, currently important to our lifestyles, can be extracted and used only once, especially our energy resources. These facts of this Earth-related human extractive history can never be repeated. In considering these facts, it is disturbing to see governmental leaders worldwide committed to keeping and expanding the present trends of resource consumption with a comforting claim of sustainable economic growth. The underlying basic problem of population growth is mostly absent from political agendas that continue to pursue the disastrous illusion of perpetual growth. Growth, quote-unquote, in terms of non-numerical things such as medical advances or education, are qualitative enrichments for humankind and should be pursued. We should spend our natural wealth on ways to make things better, not bigger. Fodor, 2001. But growth in terms of volumes and numbers of material goods based on continued exploitation of finite earth resources is not possible. More and more people using more and more resources do not combine for a successful future. Say that again. More and more people using more and more resources do not combine for a successful future. One simple measure of physical standard of living is to divide the available resources by the number of people. When resources are finite, the result is that more and more people mean a lower standard of living for everyone. Inevitably, we must adjust to a future of less, living within renewable limits. So the question we confront is, can we continue to maintain the present high standard of living for those who now enjoy such, and hopefully raise the standard of living to a reasonable level for all others using truly renewable earth resources? Can we live on current resource income instead of an inheritance from the past? Time appears to be rapidly running out on making this transition successfully, especially as population continues to grow. In one of his earlier books titled The 29th Day, Lester Brown in 1978, in his subtitle, put the challenge to our future very clearly, quote, accommodating human needs and numbers to the Earth's resources, unquote. This challenge, in fact, is already here, but not fully recognized. It is the theme of most of the discussion in this volume. The critical importance of matching population size to the overriding control of limited earth resources must be acknowledged and not ignored through the illusion of quote-unquote sustainable growth. While considering the stress on earth mineral and energy resources and the natural environment resulting from population growth, the discussions following will explore equally important but hard to measure social stresses resulting, at least in part, from depletion of resources such as water supplies and fertile soils. Food shortages and civil unrest have resulted from resource shortages, and population growth in many places is outpacing job growth. These factors of social instability may and do lead to government instabilities. In some regions and in different times, emigration was the historical outlet for overpopulation. Movement of people to less occupied lands or recently to more affluent lands relieved social stress. But there are no longer empty lands, and many nations resist large immigrations. The world is a full house, as clearly documented by Brown and Kane in 1994. Forrester, in 1973, writes, quote, Relying on technology to solve the problems created by population growth is to evade the question of how to slow growth. In the past, technological advance has been used to increase population and demands on the environment. A later advance in technology could be used to increase human well-being rather than human numbers, unquote. He concludes, quote, "The optimistic future lies in the direction of first limiting the process of growth and then using technology to raise the standard of living and the quality of life," unquote. Population growth that increases resource consumption, job competition, various impacts on the environment, and more crowding is now the world's greatest problem. I'll say that again. Population growth that increases resource consumption, job competition, various impacts on the environment, and more crowding is now the world's greatest problem. Current population size, and even more so, expected continued population growth, underlie nearly all other world problems. One organization states it this way, quote, "Whatever your cause is, it is lost without population control," unquote. Many scientists and others have studied the prospects for a future relative to population size and the probable available resources. One fact is abundantly clear. We have already exceeded the permanent, sustainable carrying capacity of the Earth. Our challenge is to reduce population to where it can be supported by sustainable, renewable resources. Such a world economy can only support a smaller population. Everyone now living and under the age of 40 will see the realities of diminished resources and population pressure. And the years go by very swiftly. From experience, I can say that within every person age 70 is a person of 30 who wonders, what happened? The strange silence. David Attenborough, in 2011, raises this question concerning the problem of population growth. Quote, "I meet no one who privately disagrees that population growth is a problem. So why does hardly anyone say so publicly? There seems to be some bizarre taboo about the subject. This affects the people who claim to care most passionately about a sustainable and prosperous future for our children. Their silence implies their admirable goals can be achieved regardless of how many people there are in the world, even though they all know that they can't." Unquote. We must recognize that the great lesson of history is that things change and those organisms that adjust survive and those that do not adjust become extinct. Climate and environment are intimately linked, and these combined with adaptive mutations have been the moving forces for evolution. The key to survival is not only to adjust to change, but also to preserve the elements in the environment essential to survival. As a thinking species, we must put our brains and will to these problems. Illusion of sustainable economic growth / the reality of non-renewable. The current increasing demand for non-renewable resources, fossil fuels, metals, and non-metals, leads us to realize the fallacy of unlimited economic growth. The base for all human economies and societies for provision of material goods, whatever they may be, is earth resources. Consuming non-renewable and finite resources means they will be depleted. Increasing demand depletes these resources at a faster rate. Economic growth depends on increasing consumption of everything. The current ideology of economic growth moves us closer and closer to depletion of resources, both renewable and non-renewable. Non-renewable means just that, no second helpings. An agrarian economy based solely on the annual incremental income from renewable resources can be repeated. The Earth's base of fertile soil, fresh water, and environments that maintain a diverse biological resource must be preserved for future human existence. The industrial civilization, with all its benefits that some now enjoy, tends to be regarded as the norm of human life, but it is far from the norm, which over the ages was an agrarian-based existence. Our current intricately developed economic networks with a largely oil-based lifestyle are temporary circumstances, making this a truly unique time in human history. Our modern developed societies tend to be removed by their present degree of affluence from the environment as the basis of existence. Food comes from the supermarket, Clean water comes from the faucet, and electricity comes from the light switch. But the closer people live to the margins of existence, the more they realize the direct importance of fertile soil, safe drinking water, and natural life-supporting contributions from the environment. Herman Daly once said, quote, "Our economies are wholly owned subsidiaries of the environment." I'm going to reread that paragraph. "Our modern developed societies tend to be removed by their present degree of affluence from the environment as the basis of existence. Food comes from the supermarket, clean water comes from the faucet, and electricity comes from the light switch. But the closer people live to the margins of existence, the more they realize the direct importance of fertile soil, safe drinking water, and natural life-supporting contributions from the environment. As Herman Daly has said, quote, "Our economies are wholly owned subsidiaries of the environment," unquote. Change. Human lifetime is so short that the concept of geologic or even historic change is generally beyond experience. But change is part of normal Earth processes and must be anticipated. Over geologic time, great changes are in evidence, such as fossil coral reefs in the Sahara Desert. Sea level fluctuation is one of the more obvious changes, as evident from shark teeth I have collected in Montana. More recent change includes the arrival of humans in North America by way of a land bridge from Asia to Alaska during the time of lower sea level, when much water was locked in extensive continental glaciers. Sometimes changes are rapid. Conkling et al., 2011, from research in Greenland, notes that, quote, "The lessons of Greenland ice cores are very clear. Big, widespread, abrupt climate changes have happened repeatedly before there were a large number of modern humans on the planet," unquote. Humanity's perfect storm. Present trends are likely to continue. This century will witness a number of disturbing situations and challenges, a collective storm of resource issues. Lindsey Grant, in his 2011 paper, "The Apocalypse is on Schedule," notes the convergence of many negative trends this century. These include decline of oil supplies affecting nearly all aspects of life, but especially agricultural productivity, crucial to human survival. Declining quality of soils due to erosion, salinization, and the loss of organic material necessary for healthy soils. Loss of topsoil worldwide 10 times as rapidly as it is being formed, from a human perspective, a non-renewable resource. Per capita arable acreage declining, in some areas already too small to provide for human survival beyond bare subsistence level, and immediately vulnerable to drought. Rising sea level encroaching on coastal agricultural land and flooding human occupation of coastal regions. Declining supplies of fresh water for irrigation due to climate change, reducing mountain snowpack to provide needed summer runoff, and aquifers overpumped worldwide. And decline to the point of exhaustion of the high energy density fossil fuels and the transition to renewable low energy density alternative energy sources, which may not be able to power industrial civilization as we know it today. In the meantime, the freight train trajectory of world population growth continues with its increasing resource demands. The rate at which we are extracting and depleting non-renewable Earth resources ensures that they will last only a short interval in human history. The United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization predicts that the world will need to provide 70% more food by 2050 to feed its population. Population now grows faster than food production, and the result is that more than half the world population is currently undernourished. This is the largest number ever in history. Pimentel, 2011. Growth in agricultural production is expected to slow. Achieving any significant growth in agricultural production will be difficult as the resource base for food production, fresh water and fertile soil, declines. This volume, Geodestinies, considers the very essence of human nature. We must look to the potential of directing human behavior into consistently constructive channels. Past failures in human relations must be instructive in their negative impacts. As he viewed the destruction of the end of World War II, General Omar Bradley said, quote, "We are technological giants, but moral midgets, unquote. Continual strife with its immense suffering and loss of life, and in the use of huge amounts of irreplaceable Earth resources, is folly at its utmost. Quote, war, with its tidal waves of destruction, slaughter, and grief, is the answer to no human problem and an insult to the intelligence that God gave us that we cannot find other answers. Francis Pendleton Gaines. A reordering of national priorities is in order, especially for the United States, now deeply in debt both domestically and internationally. Much treasure has been used for destructive purposes. Charles Osgood, in See You on the Radio, commented, quote, war is not the only kind of man-made disaster on this planet, but is one of the most destructive things we can do to each other, which is to say ourselves. We don't really need to make enemies of one another. Don't we have enemies enough? Common enemies in earthquakes and windstorms and droughts and floods and famines and plagues affect us all, unquote. Many vital elements for our future in a renewable resource world are neglected in order to finance bombs, fighter planes, and other quote-unquote articles of war. The future depends on our highest and best use of all available resources. Many, if not most, people in the developing and developed world are significant consumers in materialistic societies. But some societies, even now, are just as happy not encumbered by so many things. So a future of less may not mean a change in life satisfaction and would probably be less stressful for many. The value of human intellectual capacity is immense and must be fully applied to the pursuit of truly sustainable growth. We have an inherent optimism that we can solve problems. This optimism, however, simply must keep in view the realities of Earth's limited resources determining our physical future. How we individually live, how we vote, how we conduct ourselves, among others, are personal choices that will become an aggregate response to the challenges ahead. The historically brief, happy time of fossil fuels and its benefits, including highly productive agriculture, social and personal mobility, and uncountable consumer products, will change. And so must we. I enjoyed the privilege of discussing the probable course of events with my friend, the late Garrett Hardin. Looking at the world as we saw current trends sometimes led us to be somewhat less than optimistic about the future. But as we came to the end of our visit, Garrett would grasp my hand firmly and say, quote, yes, but we must try, unquote. For all of Garrett's writings about the problems we face, he always thought we might find solutions. It is in that frame of thought that this book is written. The human race is likely to be here for quite some time, but probably in fewer numbers. How we achieve a sustainable resource future and in what civil condition we survive doing so are not clear. Different lifestyles and economies will exist and will present different challenges and opportunities. The continued growth of population is a demographic freight train moving headlong, at least to mid-century, against the depletion of non-renewable and the degradation of many renewable Earth resources. There are some minor but important positive factors in environmental awareness and protection. Wildlife preserves, marine preserves, and national and local parks and wilderness areas now preserve important natural diversity and some precious irreplaceable terrains. These laudable trends are expanding. Population growth is slowing, but still growing. These gains remain overshadowed by the basic problem of finally stopping and reducing human population numbers to sustainable size in balance with Earth's resources. Only the annual increment of renewable resources will be available for all of humanity for the indefinite future. Only the annual increment of renewable resources will be available for all humanity for the indefinite future. This will be the defining century for the lives of all generations to come. This will be the defining century for the lives of all generations to come. Avoiding chaos from the stress of transition to a future of less will require the best of human endeavors. Quote, accepting the fact that the world available to humans is a limited one will be one of the most difficult tasks ever tackled by our species. The intermediate costs will be high. The ultimate reward will be survival itself. Gerhard Hardin, 1999. Those who will be living at the end of this century will see much of this future come about. Then, as now, Earth resources will continue to be the base of human existence and will inevitably control the destinies of nations and individuals. We are made of Earth materials and its biological products, and on them we survive. Mother Earth is not an abstract concept. We must care for the Earth's life-sustaining resources much better than we have. Our destinies depend on it. And he concludes with a quote from Will and Ariel Durant, their book, The Lessons of History. Quote, "History is subject to geology." Dr. Youngquist concludes this introductory overview with three paragraphs under the title Editorial Notes. The term petroleum in that industry and as used here includes both oil and gas. The term gas means natural gas, not gasoline, which is common public use, is shortened to gas. Also, the fossil fuels of petroleum, coal, shale oil, and oil sands are regarded as minerals like bauxite or hematite, but they are sometimes split off from other minerals by terming them energy minerals. Also, for the sake of brevity, in some places the term mineral has been used for all energy and other earth-derived resources. Elements such as copper, lead, and silver are regarded as minerals, as are the ores in which these materials are found. The term resources and reserves have different meanings in the strict sense. Resources are all the existing raw materials in the earth. Reserves are those known portions of the resources that can be produced economically. But as prices change, and because technology can change mineral production economics, the distinction between reserves and resources has not been made at all times in this text. The bibliography lists works that have been consulted. References are listed in the bibliography that express divergent views. Each has been consulted, but may or may not be cited in the text. These are included so that varied opinions may be examined if the reader wishes to pursue the subject. Geodestinies considers the global impact of the present huge demand for minerals in its many aspects. It is a multidisciplinary view, which includes national and international economics, politics, technology, demography, history, sociology, engineering, and geology. Issues of ethics must also be part of this study. Humans live with one another in an increasingly crowded world, demanding more and more resources. How are these resources to be divided? Who has the right to use them? And what claims upon them do we recognize for generations yet to come? Do we provide for such claims? If so, how? Walter Youngquist, Eugene, Oregon, April 2012.